Vav Amud Aleph, 10 lines from the bottom. The line begins, Kasha.
We learned yesterday at Braisa with a bunch of situations involving an esrog that make it, a bunch of things with an esrog that make it possible. So one of them was, we said it was machloikas actually. We said esrog aboiser, an unripe esrog, the rakiba poiser b'chom machshirim. The rakiba said it's possible, the chom said it's kosher. Now, boiser usually means a fruit that's in a very, very early stage of development. So Rashi over here defines, in fact, that it means that the esrog is only the size of a bean. Tosfos actually disagrees and says that no, that would be boiser as far as grapes, for example, because grapes don't grow that large in the end. So therefore, bean is already an important stage in their development. Whereas an esrog, being a larger fruit, it would need to be a larger thing. Anyway, we said Rabbi Akiva says it's possible, the Chum says it's kosher. Amar Rabba, Rabbi Akiva, but Rabbi Shimon Amru Dova Achad. So Rabba says you should know that Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shimon both said the same thing regarding unripe esrog. Rabbi Akiva Hoda Amaram. We said Rabbi Akiva is saying that an unripe esrog is possible to use, and point is, in other words, that he considers that when the esrog is at the stage of boiser, it's not considered a pre yet, so you can't use it as pre eitz hadar. Reb Shimon Maidi, where do we see Reb Shimon addresses this? D'Tanya, we learn a Braisa, or D'Tanan, really, it's Mishnah. Reb Shimon poters esrogim b'koitnan. Reb Shimon patters esrogim while they're still small from Trumas and Maisus. So you see, on the face of it, Reb Shimon is saying, why would Reb Shimon be saying that they're potter from Maisus? Because it's not a fruit yet. So therefore, it amounts to the same thing. However, good morning, Ellie. However, the Gemara is at bottom of Lamed Vav Amud Aleph. However, Omalei Abaya Duma Loihi. But Abaya says to Rabba, not necessarily, maybe not. Ad Kan like Omer Rabba Kiva Hocha to be in an Hoder Veleka. You know why Rabba Kiva would say over here that an unripe esrog is possible? Because not Hoder, because it's small and therefore too small and too unripe to be beautiful. Avol Hosam, but over there when it comes to Maestris, maybe you can have balance with like. Maybe Rabbi Akiva holds like the Chachamim who disagree with Rabbi Shimon and say already that even when the fruit is unripe, even when it's the small size or the size of a bean according to Rashi, or small or larger than that, but still much smaller than an esrog should be according to Tosfos. At any rate, maybe then he would agree with the Chachamim that it is chayv and maaser. Inami, or the other way around. Ad kan like Amar Reb Shimon Hossam el dechtiv asa to asa is called tvor sarefa. The reason why Reb Shimon would say it's potter over there is because it says you should take maaser from all the produce of your field, and the word tvor sarefa implies kederach shemene other metziyim lezriya, the regular kind of way where people take things in order to plant them, and you don't plant a esrogim that are that unripe because the seeds in them are not mature enough yet to grow. So therefore he would patter it. Aval Hacha, can I balance your life? But maybe over here, Reb Shimon would agree with the Chachamim that even though the fruit is boiser, nevertheless, it's still big enough. It's still big enough, mature enough to be able to take for lulav and esrog. And then when I said, let's take the tula immediately, there's nothing more to talk about. We have to accept the bias point that unlike what Rabbi said, that Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shimon are following the same svara, in fact, there could very well be different svaras that don't relate to each other at all. Okay. Another thing we said in the Braisa, another case we said in the Braisa, was Gidloi ben Fus, if you grew the esrog inside a form, Vasoikim in Briacheres, and you made it in the shape of a different creature. So we said, for example, what they do nowadays occasionally, where you take a bottle and put it over the, on a bottle or something like that, and put it on over the unripe fruit, and the fruit develops inside the bottle, and it gets the shape of the bottle. So, Omar Rava Lashanu El Briacheres. So Rava says that's only talking about if it became like a different species. If it became shaped like a different species, Avo Kibriyase Kosher. But if it remained the shape of an estrog, then it's still kosher. Shita. Well, obviously, Kamin Briacheres Tanan. After all, the Brisa had said that it became like a different species. So the Brisa itself is clearly implying that if it still looks like an estrog, then it's kosher. What is Rava adding? The answer is, the chidush is that what Rava is talking about is, what if you made the estrog with this form that the estrog grew inside? What if you made the estrog shaped like dapi dapi? So that would be, which we'll explain in a second what that is. So without Rava telling you, you would think maybe that's too different from a real estrog to be kosher, and Rava is telling you nevertheless it's kosher. What is dapi dapi? Rashi describes it looks like a water wheel, as if like you have a lot of boards that are all attached together around one axis. So you have, in that sense, it looks like a regular estrog. A regular estrog has ridges after all as well. But here you have the ridges are made unusually regular and unusually deep. So it looks like a water wheel. So nevertheless, Rava is telling us that still looks enough like a regular estrog to still be kosher, even though it is somewhat different. Rabbi Hanano and a couple of other Rishonim have a different explanation. What it means is, let's say the bottle or whatever that you used was the shape of an estrog but flattened. So now the estrog that grew in there ended up being flattened. It ended up becoming and then it ended up becoming square or some other shape with angles to it. Nevertheless, it still basically looks like an estrog. Then Rava is telling us it's still kosher. Itmar. So now we have a discussion, another point about an estrog that might be fossil. Estrog should be kvu achborim. An estrog that was punctured by mice, right? Mice ate part of it and punctured it. So Omar Rav ain't a hoder. So Rav says such an estrog is not hoder, therefore it would be fossil. And in general, by the way, the rules, what we've been saying throughout the perek is the rules where an estrog is potter because of lachem or things like that, then generally it's only possible on the first day, as opposed to ones where it's not hoder, then many times those apply throughout the yom. So the Gemara says, "Any, is that so? That an estrog like that is possible?" But Rav Chanina matzvah v'nafikva. Rav Chanina used to dip his estrog into a sauce, which is the normal way they ate in those days. So in other words, he would eat part of the estrog, and he would be yotze with it. So even though the estrog is missing something because he ate part of it, nevertheless, he could still be yotze with it. Now, of course, Rav and Rav Chanina are two different people. Rav Chanina doesn't have to be agreeing with Rav, but the Gemara wants to assume that Rav Chanina does agree with Rav. There's no particular reason to assume that they're disagreeing. This that we're saying that he would eat it, actually, is the question is, there are a couple of points that the Rishonim bring up in this connection, one of them being, how are you allowed to anyway? We're going to learn later on that the Dalet Minim are reserved for the mitzvah, and you're not allowed to use them during Sukkos for anything else. So you're not allowed to eat them, among others. So we're going to learn later on, though, actually, we learned earlier in the Masechta that the Sukkah and the decorations of the Sukkah and whatever are also off-limits during Sukkos, unless you made a specific t'nai during Bein HaShemoshah, so the first day of Sukkos, and then according to some poskim, you also need to repeat that every day of Sukkos, Bein HaShemoshah. But here, with the Esrog, all you need is, you can have, later on, we're going to talk about, you can have a different Esrog reserved for each day of Sukkos. You can have a bunch of different estrogim reserved for the different days of Sukkos, and each one you would then be allowed to eat the next day. So we could be talking about that Rav Chanina would do that he's eating one of the estrogim whose time hasn't come yet for the mitzvah. He didn't yet reserve it for that day's mitzvah, and then later on when it comes that estrog's day, then it already has some of it missing, and still he's yotze with it. There is actually, though, The Meiri brings a possibility, though, that maybe what it is we don't mean that he's actually yotzer with it, as in the mitzvah of Dalet Minim. We're going to learn a short thing later in the perek that people used to carry around the wool of an estrog all day. So besides the fact that they used it during benching Lulav and Esrog in the morning, and then for challah, like we do, they would carry it around all day. So that one they're carrying around obviously doesn't have to be a perfectly kosher one, and therefore maybe he would be using it for that. Still, though, the fact that we use the word in the Gemara of a nafik, meaning that he's yotze, implies that it's an esrog that he could have been yotze with if he wanted to. Anyway, so the question is how a part of the esrog is missing. So the Gemara says on the face of it, then maybe we don't accept what Rav is saying about an esrog with that mice made holes in it. But we have to ask, never mind that. Well, Rav Chanina Kashimas Nissin knew, and according to Rav Chanina, wouldn't it be difficult for him from the Mishnah, which after all, the Mishnah had said that an esrog that's chos, nikav v'chos of kol shehu, that if the esrog has a hole in it and some of its substance is missing, then it's possible. Here, Rav Chanina ate part of the esrog, so some of it is missing, and still was saying he's yotze with it, or he could have been yotze with it, or whatever. So how does Rav Chanina understand the Mishnah? So the Gemara says, "Bishleima masnisa Rav Chanina lekasha." Really, actually, okay, fine. The Mishnah is not really a problem for Rav Chanina. So the Gemara says, "Loi kasha." So for Rav Chanina, the Mishnah is not a question. Can be Yom Tov Rishon, can be Yom Tov Sheni. Can be Yom Tov Rishon, can be Yom Tov Sheni. For Rav Chanina, there's no problem, because you can distinguish between the first day and the other days. Here, where it's missing something, we could say, in other words, the problem is not Hodr. Fine, if it was Hodr, it might indeed apply throughout the 7 days of Sukkot. The problem might be that the chazer, the fact that it's chazer, we talked about the other day, that you need olakach tem, lachem, by yemerishin, olakach tem means you need lakicha tama, a complete taking. And therefore, if the esrog is missing something, that's not complete. So therefore, you could say again, since it says lakach tem lachem, by yemerishin, then Rav Chanina is able to understand that the Mishnah, when it says that nikah b'chazer kol shehu is possible, that would be on the first day of Yom Tov. And can be on the Sheni, whereas Rav Chanina would do that on the other days of Sukkot when taking lulav outside the Beis Mikdash is only Dirabbanan. So fine, Rav Chanina we can understand. Ela l'Rav Kasha, but according to Rav, who says that the problem is that the Rav who says that the reason is because it's not Hodr, and Hodr applies on the other days of Yom Tov as well. So Kasha, so according to him, then it's a question. So we started by asking how Rav Chanina can be eating from his esrog, and we're answering that he disagrees with Rav. He says it's not possible because of Hodr, it's possible because of Chaser, and that applies only on the first day. But Rav used the expression, Omer Rav, Ein Zeh Hodr. So how is Rav going to understand? According to Rav, how would that be possible that Rav Chanina is eating from the esrog? And Rav Chanina, by the way, is one of the Rabbeim of Rav. So we have to assume that Rav would not be disagreeing with Rav Chanina for no good reason. If we see that Rav Chanina ate from the esrog, then how is Rav saying that such a thing is not allowed? The answer is Amalach Rav. The answer is Rav can answer you Shaniach Borim Dimeis. It's different when mice make a hole in it, because that makes it disgusting. So therefore, that would make it not harder. So there's a difference. In other words, Rav would say, this that was saying, Nika v'chaser kol shehu, that it's chaser, that it's not l'kichatama, would apply on the first day. During the rest of the days, you know, a bite out of the esrog does not possible it. However, if that bite is of mice, which are disgusting, then it does possible it. So therefore, there's no contradiction with the story of Rav Chanina. We said in the Mishnah, esrog katan b'chol. We said that a small esrog, you have a machloikas, Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda, what's the minimum size of an esrog? According to Rav Meir, like a walnut, and according to Rav Yehuda, like an egg. So Omer Rakhram b'papa, machloikas kan, kach machloikas b'avonim b'kurzolos. So Rakhram b'papa says, the same machloikas and the same size that you have over here, you also have a connection with avonim b'kurzolos. Rashi explains here and in some other places that b'kurzolos means with a point at one end. They would use such stones in those days, they didn't have toilet paper, they would use that for wiping themselves when they went to the bathroom. So you needed the stone for that purpose, to have a little bit of a point, not a sharp point, of course, but it should come to a little bit of a point at one end so that you could use it more effectively to wipe. Tosfos disagrees and says, based on other Gemaras, that the word mekuzolos doesn't mean so much, doesn't refer so much to their shape, but to their consistency. They're a little bit soft. Not so soft that they'll fall apart, but not so hard that you're going to scratch yourself. Whatever the case, you have, now, on Shabbos, yeah, if you have to go to the bathroom outdoors on Shabbos, and you're going to be using such stones, then you have an issue. Are you allowed to move them around? Let's say you have them near you. Let's say Rashi says you're out in the field and you're in an area not surrounded by walls, but you're in a field which is a karmelis. So are you allowed to move the stones more than 4 amas in order to be able to wipe yourself? That's how Rashi learns. Tosfos discusses that at some length about that and about whether in fact it can be matur and issur of karmelis for that purpose. So Tosfos discusses that not necessarily. It might mean we're talking about mitzad the dinim of muktzah. In any case, so you have it now. The fact is, though, you are allowed to use a certain number of such stones because after covered abrius, the human dignity is a very important thing, and sometimes the chachamim will set aside an isur de rabbanon for the sake of human dignity. So you have an example of that. So Brizen says, Tanya, shalosh avonim mekuzolos mutar lahachnas beis hakisei. You're allowed to take 3 avonim mekuzolos into a makeshift bathroom in the field. So according to Rashi, we're talking about that you're allowed to carry them more than 4 amas in karmelis. According to Tosfos, that you're allowed to move them and without having a problem with mukta. But no more than 3, because the chachamim figured 3 is enough. But kamashi uran, what size stones are we talking about? You have the same thing. Rav Meir emet ke'egas, Rav Yehuda emet ke'beitza. The same machlokas and the same amount, like a walnut or like an egg. Now, why is Rav Meir probably mentioning that to us just to help us remember? This way you won't mix up which tana said which, because if you remember it by the esrog, then you'll remember it by the avonim mekuzolos and vice versa. We said in the Mishnah of a gadol, the largest possible esrog that you can be yotzei with. So we said kedusha yichas kula. So Rabbi Yehuda had said that the maximum size esrog is where you could hold 2 of them in one hand. And then the Mishnah continued that Rabbi Yossi said it doesn't matter even if you have one that's so large that you need 2 hands to carry it, then it's still kosher. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yossi, Maisa b'Rav Akiva shabodah b'esek neses v'esrog v'av seif. It once happened, in fact, with Rav Akiva, that he came to shore with an esrog on his shoulder. So therefore, it was a very large esrog, so large that he couldn't carry it in his hand, and we still see that he was able to be yotze with such a large esrog. So what are you telling me, Rabbi Yehuda, that you can't use an esrog larger than what you can fit, than half the size of your hand? Amalai Rabbi Yehuda, so Rabbi Yehuda says to him, Mishom Raya, you bring a proof from there. Achim Amalai Ein Zahadar. In fact, the other Chachamim said to Rabbi Akiva, that's not Hadar, and therefore you shouldn't be able to use it. So okay, you have a machlokes of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi, whether you're allowed to use it. Actually, Rashi says, we learned the other day, Rabbi Yehuda really himself doesn't care about a hodder with the esrog at all. According to Rabbi Yehuda, the word hodder refers to something else as far as the esrog, one of the drushes that we had previously on Lamed Hei Amud Aleph. Hadar be lana mishana lashana, that it lives on the tree from year to year and doesn't fall off, or that the word is hidur, or hodur, whatever, which is the Greek word for water, or whatever. We had a few different drashas of what the word hodur meant over there. Rabbi Yehuda actually holds like one of those drashas, and therefore he doesn't really require the esrog to be hodur at all. He's saying to Rabbi Yossi, you Rabbi Yossi, who are one of the chachamim, who do say that the esrog has to be hodur, what are you doing with the fact that the chachamim said to Rabbi Akiva that this esrog is not hodur? And Rabbi Yossi would say, okay, they said that, but nevertheless, I'm still holding like Rabbi Akiva. Okay. The Mishnah says, Ein Oydin, it's a lulav el. So now we've talked about the Dalad Minim. Now we've talked about the criteria for the Dalad Minim. Now, we know that you bind 3 of the 4 of them together. We had before, and we're going to discuss, in more detail in our Gemara video. We had a machlokas with Yehuda and the Chachamim whether lulav tzorich eged or not. Does the lulav have to be bound? Or is it fine if the minim are separate and not bound together at all? So nevertheless, we said that even the Chachamim agree Nevertheless, he said that even the Chachamim agree that you should bind it because of Zekhei Livan Veil to make the mitzvah more beautiful.
Question.
Yeah.
A Nesrog that lost its smell or doesn't smell good, is it still considered Mehudar or not?
So it doesn't smell good. If it actually has a bad smell to it, we learned yesterday, Soruach is one of the ones that's possible, and we said we were discussing whether Soruach means that the inside of it is rotten or the outside of it. So if it's actually rotten and smelling bad, then we said it's possible. If just just lost its smell, Lechorda, that's nothing. I mean, as long as it's not dry, and by the way, the post can discuss that for purposes of an esrog of how we, with the other three minim, we discussed a few days ago how we tell whether it's dry. Is it that it's cracked? Is it that it's completely white and has lost all trace of green, etc.? When it comes to the esrog, they say what you do is put a needle with a thread through it and see part way into it and see if the thread gets any wetness on it. Thread gets any wetness on it, then you know that the esrog still has some moisture, and that's kosher, otherwise you know it's dry and it's kosher. So if it still has moistness, the fact that it doesn't have a smell doesn't mean anything. You know, usually it's not really going to smell, you're not really going to smell it very much anyway unless it's squeezed or bruised or whatever. If it's still completely intact, the cells of it are completely intact, you're not necessarily going to be able to smell much of a smell anyway. So the Mishnah says, "Ein oyin is a lulav ela b'mino. You're only allowed to bind the lulav with its own kind, meaning with something from the palm tree that the lulav comes from, or something from the hadas bush, and so on and so forth." That's what Gemara is going to say. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, that's what Rabbi Yehuda said. Rabbi Meir Omer afilu b'chut b'mashicha. Rabbi Meir says, "No, you could bind the lulav and you could bind the lulav and hadas and hadas." Dachman Arabas with anything you want, even with a thread or even with a rope, which is made from something else altogether. Amar Rav Meir, and Rav Meir says, I'll bring a proof. Not Stam people, these are distinguished people where we can learn from what they did, what's correct and what's not, and they would bind their lulavim with gold wires. And gold is not one of the species that's in the Dalim meaning, so you see that it's kosher. Amrulai, so the Chacham said to Rabbi, that's not a proof. In fact, they would bind the lulav from beneath its own min with lulav leaves, for example, or whatever, similar to what we do nowadays, and then they'd have the gold wires, lamata mean them, and lamata could mean that they have lulav ring binders closer to the bottom, like where we do, and then higher up on the lulav they have gold wires, or it could mean that they have the lulav rings and then right over each ring they have a golden wire. Either way, that can show that the main binding has done using lulav leaves, so therefore if afterwards they put gold wires on it, then it wouldn't be a problem. But to have gold wires by themselves, according to Rabbi Yehuda, would be a problem. So the Gemara says, why would it be a problem for Rabbi Yehuda? Amar Rava. So first of all, before we get to that, Amar Rava. So Rava said, what do we mean when Rabbi Yehuda said that you're allowed to use that you're only allowed to use something of the species of the lulav? So Rava said after the dikla. Rabbi Yehuda doesn't mean dafka that you have to use lulav leaves, for example. He said you could use any part of the plant. For example, you could use sieve, which is a creeping vine, an ivy or something, that grows around a palm tree, or you could even use a piece of the trunk of the tree. You'd strip off some bark from it, or you cut a thin piece, you cut a very thin piece of the tree off, and you use that to bind the lulav. Rabbi Yehuda would be fine with that. He just doesn't want you using something from a different species. But Omar Rava, my time is Rabbi Yehuda. Rava also says, why indeed does Rabbi Yehuda say that you have to bind the lulav only using something from one of those men? The reason is, Kasava lulav tzarech eger, because Rabbi Yehuda holds that the lulav has to be bound, that we learned the other day. Rabbi Yehuda learns Xeda Shava from the word of Lakachtem, where it says here, Lakachtem, Lachem Bayim Rishon, and by the Agudas Ezer, the bundle of Ezer that they took in Mitzrayim to apply the blood of the Korban Pesach to the door, to the doorway. So it also uses the expression over there, lakatem, you should take for yourself a bundle of ezer. So over there it has to be a bundle, it says agudas. And therefore, the Yehuda holds over here also, you have to bundle the minim together. So according to him, the bundling is an essential part of the mitzvah. And therefore, the imaisi minachlina. So according to the Yehuda, if you were to take a different min, have a chamisha minim, then you have 5 minim, and then you're over on the issue of bal tois, of not adding to a mitzvah. There was a Tosfos a few days ago that discussed that that maybe even Rabbi Yehuda would say, since after all, the Dalet Minim have to be taken derech b'losan, they have to be in the direction in which they grew when they were upright, then maybe Rabbi Yehuda would say that there's only a problem using a different min, only if it's also upright like the other one. Maybe if it was upside down or sideways, then Rabbi Yehuda might be okay with it. Okay, but in any case, that's why Rabbi Yehuda requires you to use the minoy in order not to be over on Baal Tosfos. And the Omar Rava, and also Rava says in this connection, so we have two statements of Rava. One, that Rabbi Huda doesn't want you using a different mean because of Baal Tosif, and then we have Rava's first statement that Rabbi Huda doesn't require you to use lulav leaves. Rabbi Huda would be fine if you're using something from some other part of the palm. So the Omar Rava, Menor Min Allah, the Siv, the Ikra, the Dikla, Min Allah, so Rava says, where am I getting that from? That Rabbi Huda would say that the ivy or the bark of the tree or whatever are considered of the Min of the Lulav, and therefore you could be Yotza with that. So Ditanya, it's like this. It's going to be a long proof. We're going to bring a couple of different things, and then at the end of it, we're going to see how this happens, how this works out. So, the Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Vasukas Teshu, when it says that you should sit in a sukkah for 7 days, that means sukkah. Shukotabra, give it a mayor. The mayor said you can make the schach of the sukkah out of anything, out of any species of plant that you want. So we learned in the first parak, the criteria for schach. It has to grow from the ground. It has to not be makabel truma. And it has to be detached from the ground. So the mayor says, once you have those three criteria, then you can use whatever you want. You're not limited to a specific species. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, in sukkah, and a hegas out of a dalet minim for the lulav. Rabbi Yehuda says that no, you can only use for the sukkah only the 4 minim in the lulav. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, the only things that you can use for schach are right now, we assume it means lulavim themselves, not necessarily any other part of the tree. We're going to see later on, at the end of, after Rava brings a bunch of Mishnayos and Braises, then we're going to see that Rabbi Yehuda would allow you to use other parts of the tree as well, but Lulavim, Hadassim, Aravis, or something from the Esrog tree. Rabbi Yehuda would require you to use one of those, or he doesn't allow you to use anything else for Sakh. And Rabbi Yehuda says, Badin Noisin, and after all, you can show this by Chava Chayma. The mitzvah of lulav applies only by night, only by day, and not by night. And yet we're saying it has a chumrah that you have to use these 4 minim and no others. And we said the other day, even if you're missing one of the minim, you don't substitute a different one for it. So if so, then we want to make a kavachimer. So then sukkah is even more chumrah than lulav and esrog because it applies all 4 days. Ainadin, Shwaitahe Elababa Minim. That much more so, it should apply only to these 4 minim. So therefore, based on that Kabachomer, Rabbi Yehuda doesn't want you using anything else other than those 4 minim. Amruloi, but the other Chachamim said to Rabbi Yehuda, that's not a valid Kabachomer. Kol din shat dunt chulosu lahachmer, the soap of a hokel, when you make a Kabachomer, and at the beginning it results in a chumrah, but later on it could result in a kula, is not a valid kavachomer. You want to make a kavachomer that you can only use those, but there could result in a kula from that. Because what happens? Loi motza abas minim. What happens if you can't find those 4 minim? You hate Yosha with bottle. Should you just sit there and not make a sukkah? Now, Torah Amav Asukas Teisur Shuvas Yomim. The Torah says you should sit in Sukkos for 7 days. Therefore, the mayor says, and the other Chachamim say, Sukkah Shokodavah, therefore Sukkah can be made out of anything. Because if you wanted to try to make that Kavachomer, you might end up with no Sukkah at all if you don't have those 4 minim of it. V'chein be'ezra omer. And the same thing continues the mayor or continue the chachamim. We find a pasuk in Ezra that expresses a similar idea where we see that it says they built sukkahs and they used other materials. The Sefer Ezra, actually, now you have, nowadays, in later times, when the same Goyim who divided up and numbered the Prokim and Psukim, not Psukim, are to begin with, when the Sefer was written, when each Sefer of Tanakh was written, it was divided in Psukim, but the Goyim, about 700-800 years ago, also created the divisions of Prokim, and then numbered them, and then numbered the Psukim within them. They also split some of the Sforim into two. This is why we have Shmuel Aleph and Shmuel Beis and Melachim Aleph and Melachim Beis. So they also, you have Sefer Ezra was originally one long Sefer, and they split it into two called Ezra and Nehemiah. And there is a logical justification for it. The first part mostly talks about Ezra, and the second part is all Nehemiah's narration of what happened in his times. Nevertheless, though, in the Gemara's times, it didn't exist. They're actually considered one sefer. And la halacha, they're considered one sefer when you write books of Nach and a scroll. Anyway, so the Gemara over here is referring to a pasuk in Nehemiah, but it calls it Ezra because that's really what sefer it belongs to. Interesting side point, by the way, we've mentioned this before. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin, the reason why the Sefer is not called by Nehemiah's names is because of a couple of things that it says that Nehemiah did wrong, one of them being that he spoke badly about his predecessors. He talks about in the middle of the Sefer, at one point, how the Jewish people were having a very hard time economically, and he says my predecessors used to, as governors of Eretz Yisrael, they didn't care, they demanded a lot of taxes from the people and a lot to furnish their table and so on and so forth. Whereas I'm not doing that. So that's one reason why he lost the chance to have a sefer named after him. But the Chidah has an interesting vote on it. He says that in later it's brought in Sforim that eventually Ezra was Nisgalgal as Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Nehemiah, who was descended from Malchus Beis David, was Nisgalgal as Rabbi Gamliel. And we know we have the famous story involving Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, how Rabbi Gamliel was deposed from the Nisios and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was appointed instead. And then eventually they brought back Rabbi Gamliel, and from then on he and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah shared the Nisios. So the Chidah says the result of that was that Nehemiah's neshama, which is now nostalgia in Rav Gamliel, went through all that humiliation. That was mechaper on his avera, and therefore the pnimiyus saying yonim is why it became that Ezra and Nehemiah were split up into two separate sfarim, and now Nehemiah has a safer name for him. So it was done by the Goyim, but it happened in Hashemayim because Nehemiah already had gone through what he needed to because of that. Anyway, the point is, going back to the Gemara, again, so we're quoting the Pasuk from Nehemiah, but the Gemara calls it Ezra because really it's one long Sefer. Anyway, so it describes over there how Ezra and the other Chachamim tell the people, Su'u Har, go out to the mountain, Bahaviu Ali Zayis, go bring leaves of olive trees, Ba'alei Eitz Shemen, and leaves of Eitz Shemen, which is a balsam tree, or pine tree, or something that has a lot of oil on it, Ba'alei Hadas, and then leaves of Hadasim, Ba'alei Tmarim, leaves of palm trees, Ba'alei Eitz Ovis, leaves of Eitz Ovis, thick trees. Now, on the face of it, I was going to ask later the Gemara mentions someplace else that Eitz Ovis is in fact a different kind of Hadas. We learned a few days ago you have the real Hadas, the kind that you can use for the mitzvah, that has three leaves on each layer, and then you have what we call Hadas Shoita, where you have two leaves together and then one leaf above or below it. So that's called Hadas Shoita. That's what the pasuk is calling over here, Hadas, whereas Eitz Ovis means the ones that actually have three in a row, that actually have three together. Anyway, so the Baskur, Lasis Sukkos Kapasiv, to make Sukkos as it says in the Pasuk. So we see that the Ezra and the other Chachamim are telling them to use a bunch of different species, some of which are not from the Dalet Minyan. For example, olives are so some of them are from the Dalet Minyan. Alei Hadas didn't find those are the Dalet Minyan. Alei Tmarim means palm leaves, those are from the Dalet Minyan. Alei Eitz Ovis, fine, is another word for a Hadas, a different kind of Hadas, fine, but Zayas and Eitz Shemen are not from the Dalet Minyan, and yet Ezra and company are telling them to go use those leaves for their Schach. So therefore you see, they say to the Yehuda that any kind of species is kosher. But Rabbi Yehuda Sofer, now what would Rabbi Yehuda answer to that? He would say, Hani Lutfonis, the ones that are not part of the Dalad Minim, he says you would use for the Ezra and company are telling them use those for the walls. But Alei Hadas, Alei Tzmonim, Alei Yitzov, it's the Tzchach. The ones that are from the Dalad Minim, those are the ones they should use for the actual Tzchach. Okay, so far we've established that according to Rabbi Yehuda, you have to use only Dalad Minim for Tzchach, and we brought a proof. And they tried to bring a proof to the contrary, and Rabbi Yehuda says that no, some of the minim in that pasuk are meant for the walls, some of them are meant for the schach. Now, Rava is still working through his proof that Rabbi Yehuda will allow you to use not only lulav leaves themselves, but even things from other parts of the lulav tree, of the palm tree. Now, Utsnan, we learned in a Mishnah in the first parak, Masachin bin Asarin David Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda had said you're allowed to use boards for sach. And we had a machlokes over there, how wide are these boards? We're talking about now boards themselves, obviously, are not made from lulav leaves. Alma sig the ichud the dikla min of the lulav. Therefore, you see that according to Rabbi Yehuda, you can use boards that are made from palm wood. And therefore, that goes to show that according to him, you can use any part of the tree. You don't have to use lulav leaves. Well, good then. In that case, so Rava says, then according to him, you would be able to use for schach, even siv, or even ikra de dikla. You'd be allowed to use this ivy that grows around the palm tree, or piece of wood from the palm tree itself. We see he allows you to use it for schach. So therefore, we can see that he'd allow you to use it for binding your lulav and your lulav and other minim as well. So you see that Rabbi Yehuda considers those all part of the min of the law. Good, Shmami know that proof. Okay, so now the question is, me Omer Rabbi Yehuda abba min a midyach min amoy. So still, you're telling me then that Rabbi Yehuda only allows you to be using dab for the full minim, nothing else. Well, Tanya, we have a braisa also that we learned in the first parak. Sikacha ben esarim shal erez, if you made the schach using boards of cedar, and cedar, of course, is not one of the dalad minim, shiyesh ben dalad tefachim, and these boards are four tefachim wide, divrei hakol psula, then everybody would agree that it's possible, both Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda, ein ben dalad tefachim, Rav Meir posel, but Rav Yehuda matcher, and if they're less than four tefachim, we said between three and four tefachim wide, Rav Meir would say it's possible, Rav Yehuda would say it's kosher. We said, actually, then we had a machloikus, Rav and Shmuel, Rav learned differently. Rav had a different braisa that says that their argument is where the board is more than four more tefachim wide. Shmuel's version of the argument was like this braisa, that they're arguing between three and four tefachim. Anyway, though, in any case, Rabbi Yehuda is allowing you to use boards made out of erez, which is cedar. And Braisa continues, a murdered a mayor, she in yesh be neser a neser to my neser. The mayor would agree that if between one board and the other, you have the ribs of a board, shemaniach psol benein or kshera, that then you put psol, regular schach, between them, and then it'll be kosher. So therefore, we discussed that according to Shmuel, we would be talking about a sukkah where you did, beginning from each end, you did a board and then schach, a board and then schach, and then in the middle you have two things, or you have two strips of schach, four tefachim wide, that are next to each other, so therefore you have eight tefachim, and the mayor would say that's the main part of the sukkah, and the rest of it is only doif and akoma, the rest of it is only like the curved wall, the bent over wall that we talked about in the first parak, and it's kosher on those grounds. Anyway, the point is that Rabbi Yehuda allows you to use boards out of boards of erez of cedar. Cedar is not one of the dalad minim. So you see, Rabbi Yehuda doesn't require you to use dalad minim. Tosfos also deals with an interesting point. According to Rabbi Yehuda, why are we calling the stuff that we use for schach psol anyway? Psol comes from the word psolus gerdin v'yekev. It means what's left over. We learned in the first parak, one of the sources that we say where we know the criteria of schach is because the pasuk says that you should use the osvacha migonacha miyikdacha when you gather from your threshing floor and from your wine press. And what do you gather from there? You gather the leftover straw and the grape branches and things. And therefore, we're saying that those are what you can use for schach. First of all, Rabbi Yehuda will hold, like we said over there, get a different opinion. Has to be like the Anani I covered. So in that case, he can have his own criteria for it, fine, especially since he had his Kavachomer. But why a point game? Are we calling it psal, which comes from the word psalus, bird in the yetiv? So okay, so one point is that he would say that it's not psalus, bird in the yetiv. He means that Tosfos gives a couple of answers. One of them is, okay, you have something that you break or cut off a tree, and that could be called psal as well. Okay, in any case, getting back to the Gemara over here, so how is Rabbi Yehuda allowing you to use boards made out of cedar if he says you have to use dalad mehem? The answer is my erez hadas. The answer is erez. In this context, actually means hadas, means wood from a hadas tree. And this is kidirava barabhona. Like what Rava barabhona says, the Omer Rava barabhona, Amri Bei Rav, they said in the yeshiva of Rav, Asora mine arozimhem. There are 10 kinds of cedars, in other words, there's 10 trees. You know, cedar itself is one. There's 9 other kinds of trees that can be considered in the cedar family. You have a pasuk in Yeshaya, the way Hashem promises that he's going to make the deserts of Eretz Yisrael blossom, and even in the desert there will be growing there Erez, Shita, and Hadas, and so forth, and several other species. Altogether the pasuk lists 7 species, and the Gemara is understanding that all of those are considered varieties of Erez, and then the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah and in Baba Basra discusses two possibilities, what the other 3 are. In any case, the point is, you have ten trees that are considered to be mine erez, that are considered to be subspecies of erez. So when we say over here, sikachab and asarim, erez doesn't necessarily have to be erez as in cedar. It can be erez as in, it can be erez as in hadaxin, which are considered to be a variety of erez for this purpose. Tosfos brings actually a gusa that maybe there's, that didn't say shell erez in the first place, and then the question was, b'chlal, where are we getting boards from? And the answer is, we're getting boards from the hadas tree. Well, we're getting boards from a hadas tree. Usually hadas grow on the bushes, but if you have one that's particularly thick, then you could conceivably make boards out of it. Okay. So therefore, so when we say shel erez, then that's what Rabbi Yehuda means. He still means actually that you're using wood from a hadas tree, according to him. Only wood or material from the trees of the dalad minim is kosher for the sukkah. Okay. Next, we said in the mission in a mayor or ma'afilah b'mashichahola, we had a machloekas about binding the lulav. Rabbi Yehuda says you have to use the min of the lulav. The mayor says you can use anything you want, even a string. So the Gemara says, and the Mishnah, the Chachamim brought a proof from the people of Yerushalayim who would bind their lulavim with gold wires. So Tani, we learn a brisa. I'm gonna mayor, nice to be Akira Yerushalayim. It happened with the precious people of Yerushalayim. Precious people, meaning in other words, they're rich. And Rashi says, Nichbadi Yerushalayim Ashirim, the important rich people of Yerushalayim. So in other words, they're rich Bekashmias, and they're also, they're Tamer Chachamim, and they're people that we can rely on, that they were following halacha correctly. And show you they would bind the lulav with gold wires. So you see, it's motive. On the law, the Chacham answered him like they did in the Mishnah. Misham Raya, you bring a proof from there. The min, they would bind it with the same min underneath. So we said either they would use, let's say, lulav rings further down on the lulav, and then these gold wires further up, or they would have over each lulav ring they would tie golden wires. In any case, even Rabbi Yehuda would be fine with that because the essential binding is being done with the min of the lulav. Okay. Now let's talk about some dinim. From the fact that you're binding the lulav. Now you bind the lulav, but you also have to hold the lulav. So now again, if the binding is not so we can take the view if the binding is not necessary. The halacha after all is like the chamim that the binding is not necessary. So now you have the question: are you allowed to hold the lulav by the bindings, or would it be considered a chatzitza? So Omalahu Rabba Lahanum Godly Hashain Bedesh Kabusa, Rabba said to the people who were weaving and who were attaching together the Hashinus, the loving of the Resh Kabusa's household. So in other words, the Resh Kabusa had for himself, he had a lulav and esrog, he had people in his household, Rabba loving and esrog, and they had people who were in charge of binding. So Rabba says to those people, Ki gadlitu hashayna de beresh kabusa, when you're binding the lulavim of the resh kabusa's family, shayri be beis yad, make sure that you leave, underneath the bindings, make sure that you leave a space for the hand. In other words, the Pashtus, it sounds like they down their lulavim somewhat the way like you have in the Delph, where they use the keshalach, where they use those woven holders where they stick the lulav and the hadassim and the rabbis into pockets of it. It sounds like what they used in Rabbah's times was somewhat similar, and therefore completely surrounded the lulav and hadassim and the rabbis. Not like, for example, when we use lulav rings, where it only covers them, where it only covers a small amount of them, then you wouldn't need to leave a base yad. But he's telling them that these bindings are covering most of the length of the lulav, hadassim, and aravos. Therefore, make sure you leave a place to handle it. If you hate it, like have a chatzitza, that way it won't be a chatzitza. Rava Omar, Rava says that's not necessary. It's true, the binding is not necessary for the mitzvah. Nevertheless, the binding is there in order to beautify the mitzvah. We said the other day that even the Chachamim say that you should bind the Dalad Minim on the grounds of Zekhevi Van Behu. So therefore, if it's there to beautify the mitzvah, then it's not a chatzitza, it's considered it's bottle to the mitzvah. Therefore, Rava says it's not necessary to leave a space. You would be allowed to hold the lulav by its bindings and pick it up that way in the yotz of the mitzvah. The Gemara continues, but Amar Rabba, Lalinkit Inish Hashina Basudra, also Rabba says a person should not hold the Hashina, the Lulavanat, and Hadas and a Rabba bundle using his scarf. Sudra is really actually a tur at the end of it hanging down on the sides. So you shouldn't hold the Lulav in the Sudra. And then wrap that around the lulav. Because Rabbah says you need a complete taking, meaning without anything in between, and you wouldn't have it. You'd have the sudur in between. Tosfos discusses it's not necessarily a matter of chatzitza. Tosfos discusses over here the criteria of what's considered chatzitza. It might be so much. So in the first part, we were talking about the bindings that are attached to the lulav, and therefore we were calling it a chatzitza. Here, the sudur is not attached to the lulav. It's just wrapped around your hands, so they're between them and the lulav. So it might not be a chatzitza, but it would still be you don't have a kichatama. You don't have a complete taking. But Rava says no. No, taking something, picking up something, using something else, is considered a valid way of picking up. So therefore, yes, you pick it up using the sudur, then that's perfectly fine. So Rava says, where am I getting this from? That sort of thing should be considered lakicha. So it's not. I get it as follows. We learn in a Mishnah, in Masechta Para. Now we know para, a drum of water, has to be sprinkled using azov. You dip a branch of azov into the para, a drum of water, and then you sprinkle it on the person or keli who's tame. So a Mishnah says, azov kotzer, a shorter than normal azov. So let's say the azov is too short to be able to dip in. Imagine you have the par adrum of water inside a bottle or something, and you can't reach all the way in. So therefore, you're going to stick the azov down through the neck of the bottle. But let's say the azov is not long enough to reach. So that's okay. Misafkei b'chut of a push, you can support it. You can lengthen it. You can lengthen it using a kush, which is a spindle, is a long skinny stick that's used as part of the weaving process, or a bechut. Over means with a thread, or a kush means with a spindle. So you tie the end of the short piece of azov to that, to the short of this kush, the toivel, and then you can dip it in, or mala, and then you bring it up. But it is the azov or maza. When it comes to the sprinkling, you have to be holding the azov itself. If you're holding the spindle or whatever, then it'll be possible. Rashi explains the reason is, practically speaking, if you try to hold it by the spindle, then the azev is going to flop this way and that, and you're not going to actually be able to sprinkle on the keli like you're supposed to. So to sprinkle, you have to be holding the actual azev, but to dip it in there, you have to be holding it when you're dipping it in too, you see that you can use something else, so therefore you see over there you can attach the spindle to the end of the azev, and it's still kosher, the same way over here you could wrap your lulav in a scarf and still be able to take it. So you have to ask, whoever says, am I, now on the face of it, why should it be kosher? The lokach v'tovel omer achmona. After all, doesn't the pasuk say you have to take the azov and dip it in, implying that you're dipping the azov itself in? So how can you be using something else? Obviously, picking up something using something else is considered picking it up. So therefore, you're fine. You're picking up the ezer using the kush, and it's still kosher. The same way, you're picking up the lulav using something else, it'll still be kosher. But the Gemara says, "Mimai, who says that's a valid group?" Maybe it's different over there, given to chabre, because once you attach it together, then it's considered like part of the actual thing. So there you actually tied the kush to the end of the eze. That's one thing. But here we're talking about that, you're not attaching the sudur to the wool, you're just wrapping the sudur around your hand and then picking up the wool with that. Who says that that would be considered lakifa? Ela mehocha. So fine, Rava has his proof from a different Mishnah in Parah. Now we have like this: the Parah Adam of water, the Parah Adam of water has to be collected in a keli, the Venasan of Mayim Chayim El Keli, and then you put the ashes into the water, and then you dip the ezer in that mixture and sprinkle it. So the ashes have to be placed into the water. So Mishnah says over there, "Nafal mishveferes l'shoyches." If the ashes fell out on their own from the shveferes, the shveferes is a tube. So you have a tube full of ashes of parah adumah. So now you're supposed to be sprinkling some ashes from that tube into the water. If instead, let's say, the ashes fell out on their own, a shoyches meanwhile is a trough. And particularly, Rashi says it was made out of stone, because stone way was not makabel truma. So this way, as much as possible, they would use with the parah adumah, they would use things that are not makabel truma. So they would put water in. So they would put water in a stone trough, and then they would pour from the, you know, pour ashes from the container into the trough. So now, if the ashes fell out of the container on their own, without you actually putting them, then that is possible. You don't have a valid kiddush over there, because you didn't place it in. It fell in by itself. Implying, says Rava, ha hi piloi, implying, but if you knocked it over, if instead of picking up the tube and shaking out some of the ashes, or taking out some of the ashes with your finger, if instead, let's say, you knocked over the tube deliberately, and ashes fell out of it into the water, so you didn't put it in your hand first. Nevertheless, the Mishnah is implying kosher, that kiddush made parah would be kosher. Now, why should it be kosher on the face of it? The lochu v'nosan amar achmona, the pasuk says they should take the ashes, implying that they have to take them in their hand, and place it into the water, so implying that you need to actually take it with your hand, and place it. So therefore, you see from that taking it through something else is considered a valid taking, and there nothing's attached over there. The ashes are not attached to the container, and you still see that it's kosher if you shook the container, for example, and shook out some ashes from it. So therefore, by the same token, even though it says alokach, so the same thing over here, Rava says, even though it says alokach tem, nevertheless, you're still able to take the lulav using something else. Now, on the other hand, there's someplace else where it talks about in the Gemara, and therefore the Rambam brings it based on that halacha, and Shulchan Aruch brings it halacha, that this is only talking about if you're doing a lakicha that you're doing in a dignified way. So you're taking the lulav in your sudur, that's a dignified way of carrying it. So therefore you would be yotze that way. But let's say, for example, you took the dal and minim and put them in a pot, and then you picked up the pot, you wouldn't be yotze that way. Not because that wouldn't be considered a covered way of doing it, and therefore the pot would not, therefore holding it, using a pot would not be considered a kicha. And that's our law. So you can take the rule of using something else, but only if you do it in a covered way, not if you do it in an insulting way, like picking it up in a pot or something like that. And another, you shouldn't stick the lulav into the hashina bundle. In other words, put the lulav and then put the hadassim and arabas around it, like we do. Don't first put the hadassim and arabas and then stick the lulav in. Didilman natri taipi, because when you're shoving the lulav in there, leaves might fall off the hadassim and arabas, and then those leaves are going to be a chatzitza between the lulav and the other meaning. But Rabba Oma, min the mina, in a chotzit. Rava says that one min to another, that the same min is not a chatzitza. Since the leaves that fell off are part of the same min as the hadassim, or as the aravas, then they're not a chatzitza, and therefore if leaves fall off and are between that, between the lulav and the hadassim, between the lulav and the aravas, then there's no problem with it. And similarly, for Amar Rava, Rava says another din in this connection, loy ligoiz inish lulava, a person should not cut off, suppose that the lulav is too long and you want to shorten it. Now, of course, you shorten it from the bottom end, because if you shorten the top end, then it's going to be a possible lulav. But you shouldn't do that, Rabbi says, after you bound them together, because you're going to have some lulav leaves left. After you cut them off, you're going to have some lulav leaves attached, still in the bundle, not attached to the lulav. And then again, you can have a chatzitza. But Rabbi Amar, min b'mina ein chatzitza. Again, Rabbi says, it's not a problem, because min b'mina, the lulav leaves are part of the same min as the lulav itself, and therefore it'll be fine that way. Okay. Shukriya, everyone.